now, a mix of anger and fear, the weight of the words thrumming through me. Fitzroy stared at me, his face pale. "Is this why you kissed me? Why you said you liked me? To distract me?" "No, Freya." He stumbled forward, hands out, and then paused when I flinched, jolting like he was caught on a string. "I do like you. I think you're one of the best people I've ever met. Please, stop lying." "I'm not lying. Freya, listen to me." His hands were shaking slightly, but he stepped closer again. "You know what court is like. If I was trying to distract you and make you like me, do you think I'd have done it like that? That I'd have shouted at you, distrusted you, been so slow to do anything nice? To tell you I liked you? You're clever. I'm sure you could figure out the optimal strategy." He flinched. "Please, Freya, just listen to me. Let me explain. No." If he had lied before, he could be lying now. And how would I know? I was useless at reading people, so naive. He'd proved that. If I ignored this evidence because I wanted to, how would I ever survive? I'd been the perfect victim for manipulation. Self-doubting, isolated, overwhelmed. All Fitzroy had to do was help me, pretend to like me, and I'd miss every sign of betrayal. "If you want me to listen to you, if you want me to trust you, then stay here. I'm fetching my guards. If you try and run, I'll know you're guilty. If you weren't involved, as you say, then everything will be fine. And you believe that, do you?" I forced myself to look him in the eye. My hands still shook. "I have to." Fitzroy did not run. I fetched guards to watch his door, with strict instructions that no one was allowed to enter or leave without my permission. A lump had settled in my throat, and it swelled with every word, pressing against my windpipe. I couldn't let myself get upset. I had to focus. Sten was still marching on the Capitol. The identity of the murderer was still unclear, and if Fitzroy was responsible, would Sten believe I hadn't been involved too? I'd look suspicious as his friend, just as Holt had warned me. I would have to hand Fitzroy over to Sten, or at least ensure that his version of justice was done. And if he was guilty, if Fitzroy had killed everyone. I half ran back to my chambers, the world blurring around me. Once I was safely behind the locked door, I collapsed on my bed and let myself cry, the sobs almost choking me. Dagny mewed in distress, her head butting against my forearm. I ignored her. A gentle hand rested on my shoulder. "Freya?" It was Madeline. I turned my head to the left, and my vision blurred by tears. Madeline looked beautiful, as she always did. Her hair was pulled into two braids, and although her eyes were vague with sleep, she looked at me with concern. "What's wrong?" "Everything," I choked out. "Everything." I pushed myself into a sitting position. Madeline sank onto the mattress beside me, and Dagny hopped up, kneading my legs, still meowing sadly. I reached down to stroke her behind the ears. "What has happened, Madeline?" I closed my eyes, the words stuck in my throat. "It was Fitzroy. I think it was Fitzroy. He lied to me. His father was going to exile him, and I don't know what to think, but I had to lock him up. I had to, and I don't know what I'm doing." "Shh." Madeline wrapped an arm around me, running her fingers through my hair. "Shh. It'll be all right, Freya." "But it won't. I trusted him, and now..." "Do you absolutely know that it was him?" she said softly. "It seems so unlike him." "I don't know for sure, but he's been lying. He hid the evidence from us. He took letters from my lab and hid them." "What's going on?" Naomi had appeared in the doorway, blinking sleep from her eyes. "Freya, are you all right?" I shook my head. Naomi didn't ask any more questions. She walked over and sank onto the mattress beside us, a gentle hand on my shoulder. "You'll figure it out," Madeline said. "And even if he's guilty, I've known him for so long, Freya. He's one of the few people left from before. He must have thought he had good reasons. Maybe it's better to show mercy." "Good reasons? How can it be a good reason to kill that many people? And with Sten attacking, if I'm going to convince him to stop, I won't be able to be merciful. Sten wouldn't ever let me. I just..." He can't have done it. I can't believe he would have done.
No, Madeline said. No, no one would want to believe that of anyone they knew.
What am I going to do? I'm going to have to explain why he's gone, and then people will be out for his blood. But I couldn't let him stay free. I couldn't.
You'll figure it out, Naomi said. I know you will.
I've made so many mistakes, and now I'm locking away my friends, and I can't...
Freya, Madeline shifted on the mattress, so we were facing each other. You are a good queen.
Trust me. I know royalty. I've known the court my whole life, and you are a good queen. You will do well. You are doing well. Just believe that you can do it. Believe in your strengths.
But how? You've survived this far, haven't you? I snuggled back against her shoulder.
I don't know what I'd do without you two.
You'd be fantastic, Madeline said.
Just maybe a bit less fabulous.
I laughed. 29.
You arrested Fitzroy?
Holt leaned forward over the table, his expression a mixture of satisfaction and disbelief. Yes, I said, fighting to keep my voice steady. It needed to be done.
I am sorry it had to come to this, Holt said, but he was too much of a threat.
No, I said. This has nothing to do with what you said before, but I found evidence that I know he's been lying to me. And his father, he wanted to send him away. Fitzroy has the motive. He's acted suspiciously. I had to.
A wise choice, Holt said. I had suspected him as I tried to warn you.
Yes, I snapped. All my exhaustion, the hours of crying, bursting out of me. He could act as wise and superior as he liked, but I still couldn't be sure he wasn't involved somehow. He'd still been suspicious. How dare he act like his good judgment had predicted this? I know what you suspected. You've been against Fitzroy from the beginning for no reason. You were determined to think he was guilty, or to deal with him if he wasn't. Why? Because his mother wasn't the queen?
I only thought, Your Majesty, I wanted what was best for you. I only wished to protect you.
And did you find any evidence against him? Anything, beyond the fact that his father wanted to send him away?
Not as such, Your Majesty, but it was suspicious,
and suspicious? If we're condemning people for acting suspiciously, why don't you tell me why you were in the palace a few nights ago? What did you take from the chapel?
Silence. Holt stared at me. Your Majesty.
I saw you. I was there, investigating the murders, and I saw you carrying treasure away, sneaking into the palace where everyone died is suspicious, don't you think? Do you think I should arrest and execute you for that, without any actual evidence?
Rasmus. Norling said. What is this? I was in the palace, Your Majesty, Holt said slowly, but I was helping you. That shrine was an insult to the Forgotten, and we need gold if we're going to have even a chance of fighting Sten. They would want it to be used to support you.
I could believe it. I wanted to hate him, wanted all the blame for the murders to fall on him, but that, at least, I believed to be true.
Perhaps, I said. I am simply saying... I pressed my fingers into my eyes. The strain of the night was too much. I didn't want to think that Holt had been right after all. He had still been prejudiced, misguided. He had.
We should not act too harshly before we know the whole truth. I appreciate that you want to protect me, especially considering the circumstances. But your job is to advise me. Whether I take your advice or not is up to me.
I sighed. We're not going to do anything for now. We won't tell anyone. Not until we have more evidence, one way or the other.
Freya, if you think he's responsible,
think is not good enough. Not for this. Not even with Sten bearing down on us. We have to know.
You won't be able to keep this a secret, Norling said. People will gossip.
Then they'll gossip. If we say nothing, they won't know anything for sure.
And they'll imagine all sorts of things in place of the truth.
Then they'll imagine. I stood.
scraping the hair away from my eyes. I felt like I hadn't slept properly in days, the tiredness weighing down my limbs. I need to gather more evidence. I have to know.
Your Majesty, Holt said, Sten is 3 days away from the capital at most. We must work on our defensive strategy. We will man the walls the best we can, but we will still lack any forces to meet him in the field. We must prepare. We are preparing. We have been preparing, but this is important, too.
More important, almost. I couldn't imagine how I might defeat Sten. What could I possibly do to stop him if he would not surrender? But I could get to the bottom of this murder. I could solve this, achieve something, before Sten arrived to destroy it all. I wasn't going to be sad, I decided, as I searched through the papers again that afternoon, thinking and thinking about what evidence I might have missed. The facts were the facts, and there was no point crying over them, not when Fitzroy had probably been lying to me all along. I couldn't, I wasn't going to get distracted, not when there were far more important things going on. But I couldn't ignore the issue, not when he now seemed the most likely culprit. I had to find more evidence, one way or the other, and that meant thinking about it reasonably, with detachment. I wasn't proving very good at it. No matter how often I insisted that I had cried myself out with Madeline and Naomi last night, I kept remembering his expression when I confronted him, the drop in my stomach when I first read the notes, knowing that he'd lied to me, he'd hidden things from me, that even if he was innocent, he hadn't respected me. There wasn't enough evidence here. I could have his room searched, but he would have destroyed anything truly condemning. There'd be nothing in the fort that could help. I'd have to go back to the palace again. If I could get into the king's offices myself, if Fitzroy had missed something, I bit my lip. That was what I would have to do.
Your Majesty? One of the guards peered through the door. A woman has come to speak with you. From the city.
From the city? I had thought that nothing had come of my visit to the Gustavites. I certainly didn't expect anyone to take up my offer of visiting the fort, but if this woman was one of them. The woman waited for me in a guard's room near the fort's front gate. Four guards watched her, with another outside the door. At least someone had found her a chair. She stood shakily as I entered, and I realized she was the elderly woman from the meeting, the one whose arm I had touched. She bowed slightly now.
Your Majesty, she said, you said we could come and speak with you.
Yes, I said slowly. I wasn't sure if anyone would.
You made the effort to visit us. I thought perhaps you might wish to hear the reaction there. Some people would be furious if they knew I'd come, of course. But these young things can be foolish sometimes. They want things to change, and if you agree, then that can only be a good thing, I say.
Thank you, I said. I'm sorry I don't know your name.
Bakewell, Your Majesty. Mary Bakewell. I wanted to tell you. Some people believe you, Your Majesty. In the group, they want to listen to you, and they want to believe that, well, that the Forgotten support you, Your Majesty. But some, they want to believe, too. But they want more proof.
More proof? I don't think it's possible to prove something like that.
I don't either, Your Majesty. But there we are. That's how they feel. And then there are the extreme ones, of course. The ones who aren't happy if they aren't shouting. I can promise, none of us were involved in what happened to the court. We've never been like that. A couple of them now. They think violence is the right path. They tried to attack you once. But most of them just want change. They just need a little encouragement to believe.
Encouragement, I said, short of getting the Forgotten themselves to descend from the sky and give me their endorsement, I couldn't think what more encouragement I could give. But it was something. They weren't all against me. They wanted to believe, if only I could convince them. This time, I went to the palace alone. It was dangerous. No guards, no friends, no one to protect me beyond my own wits. But I couldn't trust anyone now. I had to see the evidence without giving anyone the chance to interfere. Nobody tried to stop me. The guards at the fort's entrance looked uncomfortable with my orders, but they opened the gates anyway. What else could they do when the queen told them she needed to go into the city? The halls of the palace were silent this time. Occasionally, I heard the rustling of rats settling into the unoccupied space, but no human footsteps, no other signs of life. The figures in the portraits stared at me, and every step sounded too loud on the marble floor. A large painting of Fitzroy's father watched me as I climbed the stairs, one hand on his hip, the other brandishing a sword he had never used in his lifetime. Fitzroy had cooperated enough to tell me where his father's study was, at least, and it seemed he had told the truth. It was inside the king's private quarters, on the third floor of the palace, and he had left the door unlocked. I paused on the threshold. I'd never been in the king's quarters before, not even the semi-private ones. And although he was dead, although I was now queen, it still felt dangerous, forbidden. I didn't belong there. But I couldn't let that silliness stop me now. I forced myself to step into the corridor. It wasn't what I had expected. The king had been ostentatious, wasteful, but he hadn't filled these rooms with the usual gold paneling and endless staring statues. A couple of paintings hung on the walls, but otherwise, the place was almost plain. The king's study was also more sensible than I had expected. A huge oak desk filled most of the room, and several shelves leaned against the walls. No paintings here. I hurried around it, lighting the sconces on the walls, until the room flickered with light. It was mostly empty, thanks to Fitzroy. But he couldn't carry an entire room's worth of papers, even if he wanted to. There had to be something here. And the king, it seemed, had been incredibly messy. Papers had been shoved on top of books on the bookshelf. They'd been piled on the windowsill behind the curtains. They teetered in the corner and under the desk. A quick glance through the stacks on the floor suggested they were almost a year old. Probably not relevant, which would explain why Fitzroy hadn't brought them. But I couldn't leave anything to chance. Evidence could be hidden anywhere. I sat in the king's red velvet chair, cushioned by its luxury. If only the king had cared as much for organization as he did for comfort and gold. I looked at the chaos on the desk again. I had no time left, and this would take hours to sort through. But I needed to play to my strengths. I would work out a system, and I would get through everything, bit by bit, until I had the whole picture in mind. The hours flew past, Sten's army getting closer and closer to the capital, and I found nothing. Nothing about Fitzroy, nothing about the banquet, nothing hinting at the murders. A few letters from nobles, a few drafts of notes to send back to them. Pleas from his advisors to consider this or that. A note from Holt, warning the king of the expense of his birthday celebrations, but no sign of how the king had responded. One letter of note came from Rasmus Holt. In it, he begged the king to consider using some of the gold decorating the chapel to support victims of a flood in the west. But the king had merely scribbled, "Find other resources," at the bottom. I ran my finger along Holt's signature. Yesterday, I would have added this to the pile of reasons why Holt must have been involved, why he resented the king and tried to create a new regime. Now, I wasn't sure. It explained his appearance in the palace, confirmed that he supported charity and religious simplicity. It wasn't necessarily a motive for murder. Once I'd worked through the piles under the desk, I crawled underneath, searching for any dropped pages. When that revealed nothing of worth, I emerged and pulled books out from the shelves and moved the curtains aside, checking for any hidden pages. Behind one of the curtains was a waste paper basket. It was full. Most of the pages were unfinished letters, full of crossed-out words and apparent frustration. I skimmed through them, but found nothing useful. After several hours, the king's desk was completely tidy, his notes sorted by topic and author, and I'd found nothing more than a few coins lost in the mess. I slumped back in the chair, tiredness weighing my eyelids down. If I found nothing, if there was nothing to find, I couldn't stay in this room any longer. I needed to stretch my legs, to see what else this part of the palace had to offer. There had to be secrets and intrigue behind some of the doors. I stepped out of the office and stopped. A large landscape hung on the wall opposite the door. It had been obscured before, by the darkness, by my distraction, but it caught my attention now. Rolling hills, tinted orange and yellow by the setting sun. The sky was a rainbow of color, the sunset gliding across the clouds. Near the top, where red blended into blue, there was a streak of yellow that almost looked like gold. The same yellow that had been used in the cake. The same yellow as the powdered dye when it colored my fingertips. I scrambled closer until my nose was inches from the canvas. It was here. I searched the painting for a signature, for any sign of its origin, but there was nothing, so I wrenched it from the wall and pried it out of its swirling golden frame. A note had been tucked inside. It said, "I see these hills from the window of our country manor, and the richness of the sunset makes me long for your company and your court. I hope I can return soon and find you as well as when I left." It was signed by Madeline Wolfe. 30. I turned the painting over and stared at the sky. It was King's yellow. I was certain of it. The color Madeline claimed she had never seen. The color so rare and expensive that the king had to send thousands of miles away to get it. Someone had told him about the color. Someone had exposed him to the idea. And Madeline was close to him, the only painter that I knew of. She'd used the color, and she'd lied about seeing it, and... I pressed the heels of my hands against my eyes. I had to think. I'd already accused someone I cared about. Was I now going to accuse another over a painting? The evidence was scant, to say the least, and everyone had lied, with their lives potentially at risk. Lied about religion, lied about what they had lost, lied about a small dab of paint in a landscape. I had to think. Think. Fitzroy had reason to silence his father, but to kill everybody and not make a move for the throne himself? To help me in my investigations, and he had helped. He had brought me closer to the truth. And defend me against Sten? I'd seen him in the fort, the morning after the banquet, and again after I was crowned. He'd been distraught. He had looked like he could not make sense of what was happening, like he didn't quite believe the pain was real. I wasn't good at reading people, but Fitzroy. Fitzroy had been so raw. He was a good performer when he wanted to be, but I'd seen him without that mask now, and I felt certain I'd seen his true feelings then. His face, in that moment. The agony there. Madeline had been sad, too. Madeline had grieved, but always in that sophisticated, wonderful Madeline way. So perfect, with none of the messiness that Fitzroy and Naomi had displayed. And she'd been out of the capital when the attack occurred, safe and free from suspicion. If I hadn't left the palace, she would have inherited the throne. And when the poison was a food dye, intended to be in the meal, included on the king's orders, who would ever suspect her of murder, even as a painter who had used the color before? She'd said she was away from the capital because of an illness, one that seemed to have no clear cause. Melancholy, the doctor called it. But Madeline said she'd never had such a stomach ache from melancholy before. Stomach ache, a sign of mild arsenic poisoning. Arsenic, like in the paints she used. And Madeline licked her paintbrushes. I'd seen her do it, smoothing the bristles on my makeup brushes. If there had been traces of King's yellow there, it could have given her that stomachache. And if she'd realized the source, had that given her the idea? I did not want to believe it, but it was possible. It was beyond possible. When I got back to the fort, I did not order guards. I did not make a scene. I walked into Madeline's rooms to find her sitting in an armchair, a book propped open on her lap. Our eyes met, and Madeline's lips parted, her face paling slightly. And I knew. There was such a resigned look on Madeline's face. She stood, her skirts flowing around her like water, never looking away. "It was you." I was surprised by how calm I felt, how clear. Now it was fact. Now I knew. It didn't seem worth screaming about. "You killed them." "I didn't put the poison in the cake," she said, in the same soft tone I'd heard from her before, whenever she discussed the deaths. "But I introduced him to that dye. Yes." "Why?" There was so much I needed to say, but that question pushed away everything else. "Why?" "It needed to be done." "You needed to kill all your friends?" "I did not know he would do it," Madeline said. "I did not force him to act as he did. I knew he would like it, for the extravagance, but I did not know. I did not know he would fill a dish with it at the banquet." "Why? Why would you do this?" Madeline tilted her chin upward, meeting my gaze without flinching. "You know I loved the court when I first came here. It was so lively. Every day had a new distraction. I felt like I belonged, like it made up for everything I'd lost. And then, a couple of years ago, I was sick for the first time. I spent several months back in the country, painting, walking, meeting new people, and learning how to breathe. And when I returned, I saw it, Freya. I saw it for what it really was. The vanity of it, the waste. The day I returned, we had a huge party in the garden of the palace. The theme was gold. Gold flakes in the food, gold flakes in the water, gold on the dresses and in people's hair. It was a celebration of the peace and goodness of the court, the peace we'd had for so long. And I stood in the middle of it, seeing how ugly it was, seeing how no one had really cared for my absence. No one cared about me. No one cared about anyone. They just wanted to have fun and to be more fantastic than anyone else. The next day, I went to the king. I'd seen people struggling, and I wanted to help. But when I asked him for money, he laughed at me. He said I was too much like my cousin, and the crown did not have the funds to waste. The countryside dealt with its own affairs. He had the money to let his whole court literally eat gold, but not to make sure others were fed. And from then on, I saw it, Freya. I saw what Gustav was talking about, as I know you have. We needed change. We needed it. And it wasn't going to happen by itself. Because the forgotten must return? The forgotten aren't real, Freya. We're deluding ourselves to think they are. The people who lived here before were just people, with skill and knowledge we don't have. And we'll never have them, because we think we must wait for the forgotten to give them to us. We use that myth as an excuse. Things were broken, Freya, and someone needed to fix them. I stared at her. That was your reason? There must have been more. That couldn't be it. Would it be better if I had something more dramatic to offer? Some personal grievance, some cry for revenge? Ambition for myself, perhaps? Surely it would be worse to hurt people for such selfish reasons. I wanted to help. I wanted to create a better kingdom. And I believe I have. Don't pretend you intended me to be queen, that you didn't think it would be you. I never intended that. I assumed he would hoard it for himself, poison himself slowly, until he told me he was getting more for the banquet. And even then, so many people could have survived before me. It was never about becoming queen. But you didn't stop him. You knew hundreds of people could die, and you didn't stop him. It had to happen. Epria needed it. She looked away, eyes settling on a half-finished canvas on the other side of the room. It is medicine, you know. That's what the merchant told me when I bought a tiny pot of my own. It cost a fortune, but I'd never seen a color like it, and I needed it for my collection. He leered at me and told me it was a cure for the pox and for sweating sickness, too, for many things. Of course, I just wanted the color. She glanced back at me, smiling softly. And then I fell ill. I saw the lines on my fingernails, and I knew it must contain arsenic. I don't paint with it normally because it ruins your hands, and this yellow was the only new color I had, so it had to be the source. So you sent some to the king. I sent all I had left, along with the painting I had just completed, and I told him the truth. It was a color, but also a rare and miraculous medicine that people in Rezhka thought brought good health and good fortune. I wished for him to have it, as a gold color fit for a king. And he put it in his wine. I assume so. It gave him stomach pains, of course, as it poisoned him slowly. But he didn't connect those with the dye. Why would he? He thought he was ill, and no one thought to investigate something that the king himself added to his food. You said he had been sick for months and months, long before you left the castle. I lied, she said, and for the first time, I heard a slight hint of remorse. I am sorry. You were so intent on solving the murder, I couldn't let you find out he had only been sick since I left the capital. I wanted you to think someone had been poisoning him for months, before and after I left. And that was the detail she seemed to regret. Not all the deaths, but a couple of small lies, to interfere with my investigation. I'd trusted her too much. I hadn't checked her story. Fitzroy had agreed that his father was hiding an illness, and I'd just assumed that all the details she'd added were true, too. Of course, she continued, his arrogance wouldn't stop there. He needed more and more. I didn't have any more to give him, so he sent men to hunt some down. He named it after himself, even though it already had a name, and he wanted to own all of it. I was concerned that someone would warn his advisors that it contained arsenic, but either no one knew or no one cared. They just knew it was a dye that cured certain illnesses, as long as people did not take too much. And of course, his extravagance meant he could not keep it to himself. He needed to make a big show, to bestow that good health and good fortune on everyone he favored. He had to throw that rare dye away at a banquet, just to show how rich and kingly he was. But I knew he would only give it to people he liked, which meant that those he didn't like, those less extravagant than himself, they would survive. It would be far more effective at creating a new court than I had ever imagined. I would not stop that. Even if your own cousin might die, too, I trusted in him. I knew he wouldn't eat it. The king was angry with him, and Sten was angry with the king, with his wastefulness. He wouldn't eat the gold cake, out of principle. And he didn't. But everyone else, you just left them to die? Not everyone. I thought perhaps Fitzroy might rule. I wanted to make sure he survived, so I told his father that a rumor had reached me, that Fitzroy was bragging that he'd be king. I didn't say it quite like that, of course. I congratulated the king on his decision, said I'd heard it from Fitzroy himself. I knew it would enrage him just in time for the banquet, and he'd deny him any golden cake. To put him in his place, he'd be safe. So you're the reason Fitzroy was going to be exiled. Madeline shook her head. I didn't know about that, but you must understand, the king was always changing his opinion about Fitzroy. Even if he wished to make him his heir on the day he received my letter, he would have been furious to think that Fitzroy was assuming it would happen. And even if he was furious with Fitzroy because of my letter, he would have forgiven him soon enough, if he had not poisoned them all. That was how the king behaved. And the king just happened to have made a more permanent decision this time? I do not know. He might have been posturing, ready to change his mind again, but his sickness had made him reflective, and considering what we know about Holt's beliefs, he may have been influenced to finally dismiss his son for good. And everyone else. You killed them. All your friends. The king's greed killed them. Not mine. Her expression wasn't guilty. It didn't show any remorse. It was honest. She met the truth with the same poise with which she met everything else. If I arrest you, I said, people will think it's because of your cousin. They won't believe you were responsible. And when Sten arrives, I'm sure he'll be happy to free you. He'd never believe me if I said Madeline was responsible. He wouldn't stop the attack now.
Oh, no, Madeline said. Not at all. If he finds out I was responsible, he'll punish me for it like he wants to punish you. But he will fight his way into the city before he believes you. I do not believe it will help your cause.
Because Madeline was so beautiful, so loved, so good. She was everything I wasn't, or so I'd believed. How could she have killed them?
You were supposed to be my friend. I am your friend, Madeline said. Whatever else I have done, I am your friend. I did this from kindness, Freya. I did this because it needed to happen, for everybody's sakes. I am not proud of it. I take no joy in it. I've cried over those deaths, and every tear was real. But it needed to be done.
And that was where we could not agree. No matter the flaws of the previous king, no matter who had ordered the poison, no matter how much she had mourned the deaths, Madeline had plotted to kill, and kill she had. She had killed Naomi's brother. She had killed everyone.
Did you intend to kill me? I asked.
I did not think of you. I did not know you.
And did you try to kill me after? After the poison failed?
No. No, of course I didn't. This was never about me taking the crown. I meant every word I ever said to you, Freya. I think you are a good queen. The sort of queen we need.
Then it is lucky Naomi and I left the banquet.
Yes, it is lucky you did. I continued to stare at her. I couldn't understand the soft expression on her face, her calm. You let me arrest Fitzroy. You would have let me kill him. You would not have killed him. You would have found a reason to forgive him. You have a good heart, Freya. You would have known to trust him in the end.
And what about you? What about my heart's decision to trust you?
Perhaps your heart is wise in that as well. I did what was best.
I shook my head. I could almost see Madeline's perspective, how she had twisted things around. But so many people had died.
Innocent people trying to live in the world they'd been given.
Madeline had punished them all, indiscriminately, just to say she had not done so directly, to say the king's extravagance was the cause.
Do you believe me? Madeline said softly. Or should I prepare to go down to the dungeons?
No, I said. No to both of those things. If you really are my friend, you'll stay in your rooms, and you'll help me to stop your cousin. Once we've survived that, then I'll decide what to do.
I meant what I said before, Madeline said.
You will be a great queen, a better one than I had hoped for. If I stop your cousin first.
Madeline stepped back.
You have to use your strengths against him. Unsettle him.
I don't know what he believes, but he is too superstitious to be entirely convinced he doesn't believe. If you can somehow convince him the Forgotten are angry with him, that might be the only way.
I nodded. It was good advice, no matter the source. I'll have someone guard the door.
Madeline sank into a curtsy, her skirts flowing around her, and I forced myself to turn away. I wanted to run to Fitzroy's rooms, but my legs wouldn't listen. The shock of Madeline's betrayal had hollowed me out, and I could hardly feel my feet touching the floor. I floated like a ghost through the castle, barely disturbing the air with my presence. Down the stairs, along the corridor, past the guards, to Fitzroy's rooms. I hadn't planned what I would say to him, had no time to sort through my feelings. So when the door swung open, I simply stumbled forward, my throat tight. He sat in an armchair, writing. His shoulders were tense, but otherwise, he looked fine. He looked like Fitzroy.
Why did you lie to me?
I said. My voice cracked.
Why did you hide the letters from me? When you knew...
He must have noticed the shift in tone, the way my question had moved from accusation to confusion because he frowned. And when he replied, His voice was softer, too.
I panicked, he said. I didn't know my father planned that, not until I saw those letters, when I was reading in the lab by myself, waiting for you. I thought, if you read them, you'd suspect me. It did seem to suggest I might have done it.
So I hid them. I didn't want you to not trust me.
So you did something untrustworthy?
I knew they weren't useful for the investigation. They were personal. So I hid them. But I shouldn't have. I'm sorry.
I understand why you did it. That didn't mean I forgave him, but I could see his reasons. It didn't make him a bad person, but that didn't mean I had to forgive him. I found the murderer. I had to force the words out. I'd wanted to be able to say them for weeks, but now they were just hollow. All of it was hollow. It was Madeline.
Madeline? She told me.
And I explained all that had happened since his arrest. He began pacing as soon as I mentioned the painting, and did not stop even when the story was done.
Madeline, he said. That... how? How could it have been Madeline? I just told you.
He laughed humorlessly. It was a figure of speech, Freya, but Madeline killed them.
Madeline! I've known Madeline for years. She's... how could Madeline have done it?
She thought she had good reasons. I'm sure Sten thinks he has good reasons to kill you. I'm sure everyone thinks they're doing the right thing. Doesn't mean that they are. I felt that I should say more, apologize more, dig in more, but I just couldn't. Fitzroy's betrayal was still raw, hidden underneath the devastation of Madeline. I'd cried all night. I'd been so reluctant to trust him. And then I had, and even if his feelings were honest, he wasn't. I couldn't offer him anything more. I couldn't possibly articulate any of what I felt. I scraped the tangled black hair away from my face. Madeline wouldn't be able to style it for me now. Sten's 2 days away, I said, and I still don't... Please, come to my lab. I have to figure this out. He watched me for a long moment, and for once, I couldn't read his expression. Then, he nodded. I still needed to fetch Naomi, to tell her everything that had happened. She hadn't been as close to Madeline as I had become, but she'd still be heartbroken. Madeline had killed her brother. We met her on the stairs to my quarters. She hurtled down them. Her face had been drained by fear and stopped short when she saw us.
Freya, she said. I just woke up, and Madeline's under guard. No one would tell me what was happening. Has Holt arrested her? What's going on?
I'm sorry, Naomi, I said. The words felt too heavy to speak. Madeline confessed to me. She killed them. Naomi opened her mouth to argue, then stopped. She swayed on the spot, still poised to disagree, all the fight falling out of her.
She told you that?
She did. I'm sorry, Naomi. She glanced at Fitzroy, then back at me.
How can you be certain? She said. How can you know? She could be lying, or she could be confused, covering for her cousin.
I know, Naomi. This time, I know. And I told her what Madeline had confessed.
So Madeline killed Jacob.
I nodded, and she repeated the words louder.
She killed everyone, and then she joined us, then she pretended to help us?
Furious tears burned in her eyes. She strode back up the stairs. I ran forward to grab her arm and hold her back.
Naomi, don't, I said. We can deal with her later, and we will, but we can't right now. Freya, please,
Naomi.
Punishing her won't help anything yet. We have to deal with Sten first. We have to, and I need your help.
You don't need my help.
Yes, I said.
I do, please.
You're my best friend. We'll deal with Madeline later, but first, we have to figure out how to stay alive. I need your help. Please.
Naomi looked at me for a long moment, tears still blurring her eyes.
All right, her tone resolved, fierce. Let's take down this bastard together.
31.
Sten's men are coming from the east, Fitzroy said. He had spread a large map across the lab's central table, and he was negotiating it like a seasoned battle strategist.
I leaned closer.
traditionally, he'd either wait for us to send our armies out to fight him, or put us in a siege.
Fitzroy gave me a questioning look. Then I added, that's what I read, anyway.
If we had an army, yes, he said, but we don't. We barely have any men. I'd be surprised if he even expected a fight.
What, he thinks I'll just open the gates and let him kill me?
No, Fitzroy said. I assume he'll stop outside the capital and demand we surrender. He'll make a show of being willing to negotiate. And if we don't step down, if we don't meet all of his demands, he'll storm the city the next day.
He won't expect much resistance, but he's still a tactician.
That's good, Naomi said. He doesn't think you'll be able to outsmart him, so he'll sit outside the walls all night, expecting you to surrender. That gives us time. Maybe we can attack him there.
Subtly.
But how? I said. I don't want to kill him or his men. If we poisoned them... I did not need to say what thoughts mass poison invoked, considering the events of the past few weeks.
Be smart, I muttered. Play to your strengths.
My strengths were science, experiments, puzzling out the truth. Not much use now, but they were all I had.
Play to your strengths, Freya. Think.
I looked around the room, at the different bottles and jars, the attempts at poison detection, the cut glass, the notebooks full of failures and successes. What am I supposed to do? Do scientific experiments at them until they think I'm worthy of being queen? Naomi stared at me. She began to smile.
It's not the experiments that matter, she said slowly. It's how people interpret them.
I frowned, the beginnings of hope crackling inside me.
What do you mean?
You can't fight Sten with force, Naomi said. So you have to make his supporters decide they'd rather support you instead.
As, say, the chosen of the forgotten? Make them see heresy, Fitzroy said.
People wanted proof. That's what the Gustavite woman had said. They wanted to believe, needed to believe, but they required that final push. They had to see it. I looked around the laboratory again. The experiments, the explosions, the way I had manipulated light. Science was my strength, in part because so few people understood it, because no one expected me to be capable of it.
Play to their expectations. Use their assumptions against them.
I picked up one of the crystals, letting it fracture the lamplight.
I've got it, I said. I know what we have to do.
Holt was unconvinced.
Your Majesty, he said, a little tentative, considering our last interaction. This is a dangerous plan. If it displeases the Forgotten, you've told me before that you think they chose me. If that's the case, surely they won't mind me using that to keep my throne. They can't disapprove of me using my brain to help, not when they chose me because of it.
Even as I said it, I felt a slight shiver of fear. If the Forgotten existed, if they were displeased, it still couldn't be worse than what Sten had planned for me. I turned to Norling. Do you think we can get everything in place before Sten attacks?
Certainly, she said. But Your Majesty, many other things could go wrong. If they see through it, if they see through it, I'll be just as dead as I'll be if we don't try. If that happens, you can surrender to him. Say you were misguided, he'll probably spare you. Short of that, it's the best plan we have.
But, Your Majesty,
Holt paused, choosing his next words carefully.
This plan is rather theatrical. You will have to speak well, and you
and I've never spoken well in my life.
You have improved, Your Majesty, he said quickly. Your passion is undeniable, but I do not know if it will be enough.
It was true. Despite all the convoluted details of the plan, that was the part that made me the most nervous. But it was also key to the whole thing. I needed to play my part. When I dealt with people before, honesty had made things click. This plan relied on reaching out to others, on making them believe.
and I could do that just as easily with truth, with being myself. I can do it, I said. I have to do it. My life depended on it. Holt gave me a long look. Then he nodded. I'll make the preparations. Sten made camp within sight of the city walls, as Fitzroy had predicted, and sent envoys with his demands for my surrender. And so once it was dark, I set out with my guards around me. I was dressed simply, for a queen, in a pale blue silk dress and no jewels, save for the tiara brushing my hair back from my face and that star around my neck. Simplicity, another thing I'd learned from Madeline. I needed to look like my own kind of queen tonight.
Who goes there?
One of Sten's guards shouted as we approached his camp. Mila stepped forward, holding her torch higher.
Representatives of Queen Freya, we wish to speak to Torsten Wolf.
He hoped you would be willing to see reason, the guard said. Drop any weapons here.
My guards made a show of placing their swords in a pile, and a couple of Sten's men stepped forward to check for any concealed blades. They paused when they saw me in the middle of the group, my hair flowing loose around my shoulders.
Your Majesty, the guard said.
I waited for a mocking remark, something about being desperate enough to travel to speak on my own behalf, but it did not come. Good. They might not believe in me, but these people had some modicum of respect left for the crown. I dwelled on the thought, turning it into a whisper of a smile. Sir, I said, with a respectful tilt of my head, another of Madeline's tricks. May we proceed? It is a chilly night. I was actually quite warm, blanketed by adrenaline, but delicacy was the best excuse. The guard bowed and led the way into the camp, without checking for the dagger I had tied to my calf. I didn't expect Sten to attack me or my men during a parley. They had more honor than that, at least. But I wouldn't trust my life on it. The camp was a strange jumble of sights and sounds. Men sat by campfires outside hastily erected tents, and there was a sense of adventure in the air. Yet nothing felt consistent. I passed one man fletching arrows, his hands unsteady, next to a collection of bows. Long bows, short bows, bows that had been hastily carved, and bows that could surely no longer hold a string from age. Swords of all different designs. Armor that ranged from steel plate to leather coats. Everything had been thrown together. The war camp of a kingdom that had forgotten how to make war. The guard led us into the center of the camp, and I stood tall as I walked, glad for once of my height. My guards spread out slightly, as they had agreed, to ensure everyone in the camp saw me among them. And see me they did. Whispers followed as we walked. I forced myself to keep my chin high, to step firmly, to wear the slight smile of confidence. My heart pounded, but I didn't feel panicked, not this time. The world was sharper, but I could use that to my advantage. I just needed to focus. Sten stepped out of a large tent as we approached. Good. The more eyes on us, the better.
Freya, he said as we approached. You've come to surrender.
Torsten Wolf.
Say the person's name first, make them feel known. Madeline had always said it helped people to like you, but perhaps it might be unsettling, too.
I've come to negotiate.
I don't negotiate with murderers.
Then it's a good thing I'm not a murderer. And neither, I think, are you. Stop this, Sten, before more people die.
If they die, it'll be because of you.
Sten stepped forward. The light of the campfire flickered on his face, emphasizing the gauntness of his cheekbones.
You are outnumbered, and you still want to fight?
I don't want to fight. You're the one attacking the city.
The words were rehearsed, uninspired, but that was fine. As long as he acted as we predicted, I'd be fine.
Where is my father?
Safe and well, but not here. He'll be dealt with justly.
If you are just, then you will take your men away and surrender now. I have done nothing to hurt you.
Nothing? You have torn this kingdom apart. You killed my friends.
I didn't kill anyone.
But Sten's expression did not change. He was convinced that I was the murderer, that he was doing the right thing. He truly wanted justice for his friend. It would destroy him, I thought, to know his cousin had been the one who poisoned them, for him to be so convinced and so wrong. But I couldn't change his mind with words now. I had to stick to the part I'd written for myself. "Aren't you afraid, Sten?" I stepped closer to him, fear and anticipation thrumming through me. "The Forgotten protected me, put me on the throne. Aren't you afraid they'll punish you for trying to fight me?" Sten stared back at me, nothing but hatred in his eyes.
"You were not built for threats, Freya."
"Yet you claim I'm built for murder."
"Don't flinch," I told myself. "Don't blink, don't hesitate, don't react at all." I simply had to wait.
"You are a fool, Torsten Wolf." I let the words hang in the air, fighting the urge to fill the quiet, waiting for my men to take the signal. Sten's soldiers gasped. It had begun. I couldn't let myself turn my head, couldn't break the image of defiance I was creating, but I was dying to look. I could only picture what was happening around me, the magic of it. The shadowy images moving across the tents, the way they shuddered and scampered and grew. Ghosts, or the angry forms of the Forgotten, flitting around the camp like creatures from their nightmares. "The Forgotten will not like you attacking their queen, Sten," I said. The words echoed through the camp. One of the images danced across the tent behind him, clear in my field of vision, and I fought the urge to grin. It was perfect, so perfect. A few men hidden about the camp, some small magic lanterns, a few words from me on how to make the images seem to grow or move. They were just shapes on card, just pictures, concealed images dancing in the firelight. But by using the tents as lit screens, by making the figures move and loom, I'd created something new. No one seeing them could know they were a trick, not for certain, not in the dark fear of an army camp on the night before battle. It would be enough to put them on edge, and that was all I needed, for now. "There's no need for bloodshed," I said, my voice ringing through the camp. "Anyone who stands down will be welcome in my kingdom, but the Forgotten are here, and they do not have pity for traitors and blasphemers." I stared straight into Sten's eyes, my face like steel, and saw a flicker of uncertainty there. Then the flicker was gone, and he spat at my feet. The whole camp seemed to recoil.
"Get out."
"It's your choice, Torsten Wolf."
"I hope you choose well."
I walked away, leaving my guards to follow. Every eye in the camp watched me leave. I did not stop until I was beyond the edge of the camp, until I was past the city walls, up the hill, and into the fort. It was only when I was in the dungeons that I let out a shaky breath and slumped against a wall, my nerves shuddering through me. My hands, so steady when confronting Sten, would not stop shaking. It went well, I told myself. It went well. But I kept reliving it in my head, going over every word, trying to recall Sten's expressions, the gasps from the crowd. Had they believed me? Or had they been mocking me? A whole crowd seeing through my disguise. It didn't matter. It couldn't matter. I had to carry on regardless, to fight the only way I knew. Naomi and Fitzroy were already in my laboratory, preparing for the second part of the plan. "Did it work?" Naomi asked when I walked through the door. "I don't know." I couldn't think about it anymore. I had to move. I braided my hair as I walked toward my leather gloves. "There's a lot more to do. Time to get to work." 32. Dawn approached, and I was ready. My spies had harried the camp all night, sending phantoms crawling across tent walls and creating strange, haunting noises, preventing anyone from sleeping. The Forgotten were not amused. I worked through the night in the laboratory, too focused to feel even slightly tired. I had too much to prepare, too many theories to test and test again. Now, I caught a glimpse of my reflection as I pulled off my leather gloves. I had soot on my nose, and my hair was a tangle of frizz around my face. I should have been afraid, should have been terrified,
but all I felt was calm. Calm and focused. It was finally time to do something, to act, to fight. I stroked Dagny, taking strength from her presence.